Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
Friday night, the time is right for trivia. New Year's night, it is the last official night of the Raleigh James I Hate the Holidays Club, and it will come to a crashing close after this when you can go back to normal. Actually, for some of you, that probably won't be until Monday. I realize that New Year's weekend probably constitutes a holiday as well, but this is all you got. So, that's right. The 2015 edition of the Raleigh James I Hate the Holidays Club is coming quickly to a close. We will have trivia. I've got a question for you. Don't worry. We'll have your new favorite oldie from Tim. I already know what it is. Of course, we'll talk about Natalie Cole, who sadly, but not totally unexpectedly, has died. And several other things as well. Yeah, too numerous to mention, meaning I have absolutely no idea. However, I promised you that we would, in fact, talk about Johnny Carson and talk with the guy who's bringing him back. Yeah, when I first said he's going to be the guy who brings back Johnny Carson, it sounds like he's raising the dead. And I'll tell you, in my life, he practically does that. It's Sean Compton, the person who has single-handedly saved my career over the past couple decades. And I don't know what I would have done financially or otherwise on more occasions than I want to count. You know, you talk about someone making a difference in someone else's life. And I'd like to say he defines the word friend, but he's so far past that, it doesn't begin to do it justice. But when we first met, it was about 20 years ago. In fact, 2016, it is 20 years ago this year. He was at J-Corps, and he handed me a business card, and it said, Sean Compton, not a vice president. And at the time, he had risen from the mailroom to the corporate office, and he might have been the only one there who wasn't a vice president. But 20 years later, he's still not a vice president, and that's because he is the president of Tribune Television. And so, Sean, thank you for joining me.
Raleigh, what's up, baby?
Well,
you know, you mentioned Natalie Cole. Can I tell you a really quick story about Natalie Cole?
Yeah.
And this is, and I thought she was a terrific singer, and I thought she was an amazing talent.
Yeah.
But this is, I'm at the Beverly Wilshire having breakfast, and I'm not, like, hotel dropping or anything. I'm not trying to sound fancy, but I'm having direct breakfast with an agent because William Morris Agency used to be right next door. And he keeps nudging me and says, hey, Natalie Cole's at the next table. That's Natalie Cole. I said, yeah, that's Nat King Cole's daughter. And because he was a Natalie Cole fan, and, of course, I think Nat King Cole was the greatest of all time. I mean, how do you top that?
Yeah.
But it's very sad. 65.
I know, and you know, it's interesting that in all her her bios, and I'm sure bits and pieces are coming out in these obits, but the story you just told was actually the biggest problem she had initially. For years, she couldn't be recognized as anything but Nat King Cole's daughter. And while you and I would say, hey, that's a great place to be, when you're trying to do a solo career, not so much. It wasn't until they did the Unforgettable edit that she actually embraced her heritage.
Yes, that's right.
So, amazing. Now, was she on Johnny Carson?
She was. She was on Carson. I don't remember the date.
Right.
I have to go back and look. We'll talk about Carson. I appreciate you're the last promotion plug of the last several months that I'm going to give before this thing goes to air tonight. And the reason why it's so we're making such a big deal about it is because we're not making a big deal. All of our viewers to Antenna TV are making a big deal, and the national media is making a big deal because a year ago, it wasn't even a year ago, it was probably 9 months ago because it was right after I'd started working on the deal, the LA Times did a poll of who's your favorite late night host.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny Carson was a write-in and came in first place. You know, they were talking about Leno and Letterman and Fallon and, you know, the guys who had recently come and gone, yet Carson still finished in first place, and the guy's been off the air for 23, almost 24 years now. And, you know, that was when I was doing the deal, that reinforced the gut check, because there is no research that you can do to make a decision like this. You just go to the family and you gut check it, you know? Is this the right thing to do? And you can look back at the ratings of Johnny and look back at the demographics. And a lot of people would tell me, well, it's going to skew very old. Well, I'm 42 years old, and Johnny Carson was my host growing up and ended his run at the same time I ended my high school career. So, you know, for anyone in their mid-40s, late-40s, he took them from childhood to college or even young adulthood, into their mid-20s. So that's not old. I would certainly hope that's not old. My kids think it's old, but they're 10 years old. So, we're very excited about this. And it's Antenna TV is a multicast channel. What that means is the old-fashioned TVs that everyone grew up with basically, you know, went away when we did the digital conversion in 2009, and stations were given digital bandwidth. And we had extra bandwidth to provide multiple channels. So instead of just watching, let's just call it channel 6, now you had 6.2, 6.3, and in some cases 6.4, and in rare cases it's 6.5. And with an over-the-air antenna, and if your cable provider would pick it up, and most have, you would have now, instead of, you know, 4 or 5 channels that came in, you would have 10, 15, or 20. I mean, here in Chicago, I think I get like 30-some channels over the air. And what we did was we created a classic television network that was very true. And it actually launched 5 years ago today. We launched it with Benny Hill at reruns, and then the next day, Three Stooges, and then a regular lineup of shows such as All in the Family and Three's Company and Good Times, Sanford and Son, and you know, among many others, Maude. I mean, a lot of the Norman Lear stuff, One Day at a Time. So we've really maximized this network's ability to go after that older skewing and more mature skewing audience and people who love that comfort classic television, because they don't make it anymore. They don't make it like that anymore. And you know, when you watch Family Ties, it's a rearview mirror into the 80s. When you watch Maude or One Day at a Time, it's a rearview mirror into the 70s. And that's what we've created. And we are happy to launch Johnny tonight at 11 o'clock Eastern. And we're a single feed network, so depending on where you are, that would be 10, 9, or 8 o'clock on the West Coast. And we refeed it overnight, so if you don't really want to watch it at 8 o'clock in California, you can watch it at 11 o'clock because we rerun it in late night, so you're not missing anything. And the other thing, before we get into more, you know, whatever it is you want to talk about on this, the other thing I just want to mention is that the show itself is, we didn't go and get 50 episodes that we're going to repeat. You know, when I rerun All in the Family, it's 230 episodes or somewhere around that number, and we just rerun it over and over again. We licensed a large chunk of the catalog that Johnny had provided. So we have, you know, for the first year, there's 366 days in this year because we have a leap year, and we're going to air Johnny on 365 different episodes. And that's only because on Christmas Eve we do Christmas marathons of other shows. But 7 nights a week, seven nights a week, we're going to have a different episode all year, which, you know, is pretty entertaining. With Monday through Friday, we're going to run the 80s episodes, which are 60 minutes, and that includes early 90s. And then on the weekends, we're going to run the 70s episodes, which were 90 minutes. The 80s were 60 minutes, 90 minutes on the weekends, and they'll run an hour earlier. So if, you know, you want to go to bed earlier, we put them in prime time, basically, on the weekend.
It's great. You know, when you first talked about doing this, the inside information I have on this, because today, of course, everybody's talking about how wonderful it is, and I mean, the avalanche of press is unbelievable. Well, before anybody even had an idea, but you said, I'm going to do this. And most people in your position, and there aren't many people in your position at competing places, but even people on that tier or close to it of television kind of discounted it to some degree, or thought it couldn't be done or wouldn't be done. Or I think even some people in your own inner circle said, well, I don't know about this. And when that announcement came out, it was about the closest thing you could have to the second coming. And it didn't surprise me, because when you think about it, the number of people who watched Johnny Carson in 1992, and, you know, you're right about the reasons there weren't as many, you know, channels and all of that. But apart from that, he was just compelling. That was 12 million people. the number of people who, you know, listened to, watched Leno at his height was about 5.8. Letterman, I think, 4.2. So the numbers are just there for this. And the people who thought, well, they were so high because there wasn't anything else to watch, man, I don't think you got one piece of bad
press.
Yeah,
but so what? They still watched it.
That's it. And
I'm taking them down memory lane. Look, I used this in an article when we did Variety. I did an interview with Variety early on. They wrote a very nice article. And I said, look, the one deal, I'll give you the exclusive story on this. Our PR folks agreed. I said, but you got to quote me on one thing, and that's, it's like walking down Disneyland's Main Street. You know, as much as it's torture for parents to take their kids down Main Street, it's almost like Walt Disney had this plan. The only way I'm going to get parents here is to feel more comfortable and be in an environment. It's not like, you know, a Six Flags or a Cedar Point Park where it's a bunch of fancy rides and some nice, you know, shrubbery. Disneyland's an event. And when we built this network, I said, we need to take people down that road. We got to put them on Disneyland's Main Street every night. Whether they watch for a half hour or they watch for several hours, it's comfort television. And, you know, during the holidays, we don't do 12 hours of Christmas episodes. We do almost 48 hours. You know, on Thanksgiving, we do family. We do Leave it to Beaver all day, just the family marathons. And, you know, with Carson, he was an event every night at 11 o'clock, or 11:30, I should say, yeah. 11 o'clock now. And because so many people watched, and the other thing about him was he was so original. I mean, yeah, he stole a lot of Jack Benny's timing, as if you can steal timing. I think Johnny had his own. Johnny's hero is Jack, so he took some of Jack Benny's star qualities. But the reality is Johnny was so original. And today it's all about who's going to out-curse somebody with some shocking joke or who is going to show a clip of some kid falling off a bike. I mean, it's just, it's not the same. There was a really interesting article written about it by one of the former writers of Tonight Show on Breitbart yesterday that someone forwarded to me. And we didn't even participate in the article. I didn't know anything about it. It was forwarded to me, and it was really well written. And just, you know, talked about how Johnny had a uniqueness to him. And part of the problem today is we're all exposed. You know, you want to be like me, or I want to be like you, or, you know, my son is a basketball player. He wants to play like this kid that plays for the Golden State Warriors. And back then, they didn't have that. Who did Johnny? There was no one for Johnny to model after. He came out of the war or came out of the military and went into television and had to become his own guy. And so, you know, that was the beginning of television. I mean, Johnny was just a few years after televisions were in everyone's homes. I think his first appearance on broadcast television was in 1955 on the networks, or 56.
Yeah, in those game shows, sure.
I mean, you know, that, yeah. So, I, you know, you had to be original back then because there was no one to copy. And so I just, we're so excited.
Oh, yeah.
I really hope a lot of people will tune in. I think they will. I think our audience tonight will be, you know, the biggest we've ever had. And, again, every night the goal is to just put people in that, you know, on Disneyland's Main Street, if you'll call it that.
Well, you're going to do that, no doubt. For the people who do talk about, well, you know, back then it was different, they forget, even back then, over the years, how many people came up against Carson in late night. And, well, everybody. I mean, the list is probably a good dozen people. And for the most part, no one recalls any of them, or very, very little of it anyway. Now, here you are, and you've got, you know, literally almost decades, not almost, decades of material. You're having to choose a first night show, and you and I have not talked about this at all. How did you decide what episode was airing tonight?
So, that's a very good question. No one's asked me that yet, and it's really important we picked the right episode, because, you know, let's face it, there are some where they drag. You know, you know, as much as I love Bob Hope, he reminds me of my grandfather. He was not a great guest, but he was on a lot, and he always got the first position. You know why? It's because he was very powerful at NBC.
Right.
Bob would just say, I'm going to do Johnny tonight, and they would kick off some guest, and he would just come in and do Johnny, and he was the first guest. And, I mean, you know, the exit to NBC in those days was Bob Hope Boulevard. or Bob Hope Drive, whatever, you know, in Burbank, whatever it is.
Of course.
But the, you know, so he was very powerful. So we didn't, but we, but at the same time, we had certain music issues that had to be taken care of. We have to license music. And this is a process that's been going on for almost a year now. It started in January. Took us a few months to get the family and the nephew and the estate. It's not like Johnny Carson's foundation needs our money. They have a lot of money. They just gave $20 million to the University of Nebraska. So, you know, it wasn't, this deal was not about convincing them to, you know, oh, I can make you rich. Yeah. I can make you a lot of money. They don't need our money. They did this. This was more of a legacy play for them. And that's really what it's about for them. So I had to convince them that we were, the right home, and B, going to treat the show in the right way. So they gave, and then we had to go through and get deals worked out with all the guilds because there was no precedent on this show. It's never been repeated. Most of the shows you're going to see only aired once. Because remember, Johnny did 44 some odd weeks of originals, and then you had fill-in guests, so you didn't really repeat much.
Right.
So, to answer your question, that's a lot more information than you asked for, but to answer your question, when we broke it down, what we decided to do was run the episodes not the same night necessarily, but, for example, the Oscars used to be held in April. Now they're held in February. Well, he hosted them five times.
Mm-hmm.
So the night after the Oscars this year, he'll be hosting a show talking about the Oscars the night before. Of course, it was 1983. During the NCAA tournament, he'll have Coach Jimmy V on the night of the NCAA championship game. It's basically the theme, kind of that. Like I said, we're putting you in the rearview mirror. I want to have you escape an hour every night or 90 minutes on the weekends to a time that's familiar. And you know, in the summertime, he's making references to how hot it is in Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day. I've got him talking about Groundhog Day in the monologue. We ran a Groundhog Day episode. So for January 1st, he only did a few New Year's Day shows, and one of them happened to be the first show that Eddie Murphy ever did with him. And I had I was one of the guys that brought back Arsenio Hall, and 3 years ago when we tried a reboot with him, and the highest rated show we had was Eddie Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
So other than the first show, the original, the first show was a huge rating success. But outside of that, our highest rating was when Eddie Murphy was on the show. So I opted to pick a show from January 1st, 1982 with McLean Stevenson and Eddie Murphy. And in the beginning of the show, Johnny and Ed McMahon do they do their bit together, their skit, doing psychic predictions from 1982.
Oh, that's great.
And in the shows, you know, I'm not going to lie to you, there are a couple small edits to it. One of them was a Bill Cosby bit that I didn't think was appropriate, so we had it removed.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, so it's there were a couple small things like that were tweaked. But for the most part, it's in its true form. It would take an expert to figure out if it's been edited or not. So I'll never tell which ones have actually had a couple tweaks because people are not going to know.
That's
in fact, the nephew, who is the one that really cataloged these episodes, and Jeff Sotzing is his name. He's Johnny's nephew. He was a producer and worked with Johnny for 14 years on the show, and also afterwards was the one that did the, you know, Time Life library that a lot of folks bought the Best of Johnny DVDs on. And he... we showed him a few of the episodes because we had to change the open. Ironically, we can't call it the Tonight Show because NBC owns that name, and there's confusion. That would mean there are two Tonight Shows on, and with someone with a digital guide, you know, it's confusion. So we changed the open, but once Johnny walks through the curtain, you won't notice any edits. I certainly haven't. The nephew haven't, and there are a few here and there, but. For the most part, we're keeping them as real as possible.
Yeah, well, you know, most people, of course, refer to it as the Johnny Carson Show anyway. So
yeah.
That's...
Oh, yeah, it was never I watched The Tonight Show. It was always, yeah. did you catch Carson last?
Exactly. So that's not an issue. And you mentioned Time Life, and while that was great, those are heavy edits, and they're portions of shows. This is literally the first time this has ever been embarked on since Johnny left in 92. Had anybody else proposed it to Jeff and the family prior to you?
Well, Jeff and I got to know each other really well, and in the process, I asked that question, and he kind of winked. I had heard rumors for years that, you know, a few networks, cable networks especially, had gone after it. Turner Classics actually did the best of Carson interviews, but I wasn't going to do the best of anything. I mean, Antenna TV is, you know, a multicast channel, a digital television channel that doesn't run infomercials. We don't do, you know, local affiliates can preempt for their own stuff, but yeah, we, for the most part, we don't do anything on the network. We don't do specials. You know, I've had people come to me and say, well, let's hire a bunch of round table of old celebrities to do a first run series. I said, no, we're not doing any. People tune in to watch All in the Family. They tune in to watch Maude. They tune in to watch Three's Company or Newhart. They tune in for, you know, One Day at a Time or Mork and Mindy, Family Ties. They don't tune in for anything other than that comfort television. And so I think that Jeff had had people come after him, but they always wanted to chop it up.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons he liked us as a destination was in our first meeting, I said, look, here's the deal. I don't want to chop this thing up, so if you want me to do best ofs, I'm done. And he said, I don't want you chopping it up. I said, well, great. There's the first thing we agree on. And we agreed on everything else after that. I mean, it was just a great marriage between two parties wanting to do a deal. The other issue was this rights issue I talked about.
Yeah,
I mean, I was talking, you know, I talk to you off the air all the time. And I was a psycho. And I'm one of these guys that, you know, don't tell me I can't do it because then I go crazy trying to prove you're wrong, stubbornness or whatever it is. I had to get this deal done. And, you know, originally after I made the first call to the Carson estate and they said, you know, their mistake was saying, yeah, it's something we'd be interested in discussing with you. Well, in my mind, that was it. We had to do the deal. If they had just said no, I would have walked away. I think that if it wasn't for the fact that I was so obsessed with getting it done, I really wasted a lot of it. And it's not a waste because it turned out the right way. But if it hadn't worked out, I would have wasted a lot of my company's time because it did require, fortunately for me, I don't golf. I come home, I lead a simple life. I was home every night working on this every single night. Don't forget, someone had to watch through all these episodes. And there weren't 50 of them, there were 4,000. And I had, you know, certainly I had a lot of folks who worked for me that were helping, but I did a lot of the really annoying labor early on because I knew what was going to be problematic and what wasn't, whether it's certain music licensing issues or whether it's certain performances of him doing skits where there's music inside the skit. I mean, you know, that was a big hurdle. I had to work with attorneys on the guilds. We had 4 or 5 different attorneys doing different things for the guilds. I had to call in favors with attorneys for advice. So it was a big undertaking, and I just don't think anyone else was willing to put that much time into it. But because it was a difference maker for our network, which, you know, if I wasn't one of the founding fathers of this network 5 years ago today, I have so much pride for it, I probably wouldn't have been as obsessed about it. But because I knew it was going to take our network from, you know, level 5 to level 50, I really was obsessed with getting this thing done.
Well, I think that obsession and your dedication to it is exactly what's going to make this work. But again, most people would figure that, well, everybody's on board. For a while, you had to sell this to your own people.
Yeah, we had folks in our company who, and by the way, I like it when you're the contrarian, because when I have to argue my point, I find myself making stuff up that sounds even good to me. and so I love arguing my point, because if you can't argue your point, then maybe it is a bad idea.
Right.
And so I had some of our own folks saying, you know, well, repeats of the old monologue work. Do they really want to hear Jimmy Carter jokes? And by the way, it may just be a bit of a novelty and only works for 6 weeks. I highly, highly doubt it. Highly doubt it.
So do I.
But with that said, the exposure and promotion, we wouldn't be talking tonight on your show. I wouldn't have had a big article in Breitbart or USA Today or Entertainment Tonight, Access Hollywood. We never had that much exposure. Now people know what our network is, and that's what's really important to me. Our network, when we announced the deal, was at 77% of the United States covered, which means 77% of the homes could get it. Now we're at 88.5%.
Which is great.
Just since August. And so that's why it was so important to me to get Carson, in addition to the fact that I just thought Carson reruns would work great. And I still, I mean, I'm convinced they will. And certainly, you know, we had 360,000 Facebook likes, followers to Antenna TV. And if you have Facebook and you want to find out more about Antenna TV, you can just do a little search for it. But we had 360,000 likes. Tonight we have 630. Now, to put that in kind of perspective, it took us 4.5 years to get to 360,000. It took us only a few months to get to basically double that number.
Yeah.
And that was all because of Carson.
Sure it was.
Carson was an amazing person. I mean, there was a great documentary, American Masters documentary that PBS did that was it's exactly 2 hours long. We did a little special tonight, behind-the-scenes thing that airs exactly in an hour from now, leading into the Johnny's first show. And it's a very cool special that we did that goes back to the old stage. And we interviewed Joan Embry and Newhart and a lot of folks. And it's just kind of I just didn't want to go into Johnny Cold with a lead-in of Dennis the Menace. I wanted to have something that was, you know, gave a little special tribute to him. And we've got him starring on Jack Benny's show as the guest on Jack Benny's show at the top of the hour, coming up in a half hour as a lead-in to Johnny.
Oh, great. Now, one of the things that surprised me when we were talking was that until Johnny made the move to California, the older shows, the black and white shows from New York, they weren't archived. They don't exist.
Not only were they not archived, they reused the tapes.
Of course.
And now when you watch these specials, I talk about this PBS special, or when you see the Ed Ames Tomahawk, you know.
Yeah.
Those were all captured and saved, fortunately, for the anniversary shows. Remember, Johnny did the 10-year anniversary shows? He did 10-year and this 1972 show. He did the 1982 anniversary show. And then in 1991, because he knew he was going to retire, he did a 29 anniversary show. But those were captured for that purpose only. And I have access to every piece of Johnny tape. I am one of the fortunate, you know, dozen people that has access to every single episode, the entire library. And when you go to the 60s, and you even go into the very early 70s, the New York era, those shows do not exist. And if you want to see the Ed Ames Tomahawk, it's literally in a clip library. It's not even in a show library. And it's really depressing that that happened. And Johnny was fortunately smart enough and had a vision to archive that. And not only archive it, but take ownership of the show. Because, you know, we've all seen, you know, for us, for television fans, and I just shook my head when I heard about this stuff. And I produce a talk show, the Bill Cunningham Show, that airs every day on the CW network. Mm-hmm. But our company owns it. And I've made sure we've cataloged them, and, you know, we've got 600 episodes of an old talk show, just a conflict talk show. It's like Maury Povich. But yet, I cherish it and take care of it only because so much of this stuff in the past has been thrown away. You know, Jack Benny did something like 320 television episodes. I mean, he did 600 and some when you count the radio show.
Right.
But I think only 200 are saved and archived.
Which is actually a lot when you get down to it.
Which is actually a ton.
Yeah.
But you know, the folks that kept the radio dramas and the folks that kept that stuff, you know, Johnny's first show in 1962, October 1st of 1962, the very first Tonight Show he hosted, no one has video of.
Right.
They only have audio and they have a few still pictures. And the only reason they have audio is because a big fan stuck a tape recording machine and a microphone up to the television and recorded the audio from the first show.
Yeah. Well, we forget technology. You know, when you mention nobody saved those 60 shows, well, 2-inch videotape was cost prohibitive for the most part. Now, yeah by then a Carson could have. I wondered, and maybe the nephew has told you, I wondered if he didn't find out when he moved to L.A. that so much of it was not archived. Was he aware that they weren't archiving it?
I don't think he was aware. Yeah, I was told either. He was not aware.
That's what I thought, that he just...
And then when he went to basically renew a deal, he found out they were not archived. And when they moved to L.A., he made sure of it. And I think the last couple months in New York are archived.
Yeah.
But yeah, they reused those tapes. It's not like they threw them away. And the other thing is storage. Those tapes take up a lot of space. I mean, now you put them on a thumb drive. I mean, right. I could put every episode on a 4-terabyte drive in high definition. But back then, it sounds like I know what I'm talking about. I don't even know what a terabyte is. But I just know you buy them at Costco. But you could put all those up there. Now, back then, it required a lot of space. I mean, the Johnny Archives are in Hutchinson, Kansas. They're in a salt mine. All the original masters, and about 400 feet below the earth. And they take up, you know, a small warehouse. There's 4,000 tapes down there.
Oh, yeah, and it's got to be climate-controlled and all those things. I know there's a few, and you've driven by them many times too, buildings in L.A. like the Beacons on Highland. All they are is archival tape and archival film and things of that nature. And, of course, when you talk early television and you get into kinescope, that just sort of evaporates no matter what you do to it. So we've really, with the digital age, gotten to a point where we can preserve anything on a whim, and it is sad to think about how much is lost forever from those first decade and a half, 2 decades of television.
Yes, that's well. Burns and Allen is one of our shows.
Yeah,
and we run it overnight. And one of the reasons I was thrilled was, do you know who was responsible for archiving all those episodes? It was George Burns. He said there will be a syndication market for these shows. And one of the reasons we run it overnight is. We don't run it overnight right now. People are going to say it's not on your schedule at this moment. We've run it overnight for many years, and we've run it on New Year's and real early mornings. Actually, we do run it overnight on the West Coast, early mornings. One of the reasons we run it, there's so many episodes.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you repeat the same episode maybe twice a year. Well, people don't watch that television every day. They don't watch the same thing every day as much as I wish you did. There's so many episodes, so... I watch our network religiously, and I still haven't seen the same episode twice. And he archived all of them because he thought he was a bit of a visionary on that, and that was him.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's also so timeless. You know, when you mention things being a snapshot of the 80s or the 70s, by that time you could get away with so much more in television through the censors than you could in the 50s. When you talk about Burns and Allen, that show is squeaky clean, and because of that, it is both timeless and it really has to be genuinely funny because they can't go with shock.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I mean, Gracie Allen made that show.
Oh, of course.
You know, to talk about that specific. I mean, it's such a it's just such an amazing time in television, was that era, that 60s, you know, even 70s era, and 80s. But the dawn of cable, and by the way, I'm not saying, look, I'm in the television business current too, and I think television's in an amazing place. There's so many choices. There's so much great programming. There's so much high-caliber programming out there. But there is something also really special about these classics. And a lot of it's, you know, I always say at Christmas time, and the USA Today article, I use this, so I'm going to use it because it quoted and it read back better than when I said it. You have 25-year-old adults right now listening to Bing Crosby. Well, not today, but 2 weeks ago, we're listening to Bing Crosby and the Osmonds Christmas music and Frank Sinatra Christmas music. That's because that's what their parents grew up on, and that's what their parents grew up on. And it's nostalgia. The most nostalgic time of the year is today and Thanksgiving and Christmas. And that's so for people to say these shows are just for mature audiences, and Johnny's going to find a new audience. He's going to find a lot of young adults who didn't even grow up on them.
Oh, yeah.
It was someone their older brother talked about or someone their mom and dad talked about. And by the way, we have Jerry Seinfeld. We have Jim Carrey. We have Drew Carey. We have Ellen DeGeneres. We have Eddie Murphy. We have a lot of today's huge stars on that show.
Well, the thing to me that makes it, though, and you do have a lot of huge stars, but it's really not that. It's like when we've talked about great radio hosts, if they're only as good as their guests, they're going to be in deep, deep trouble. And the same thing is here. All of us in the 60s and the 70s as well, and probably much later too, but by then I wasn't watching anything, but we tuned in for Johnny, not who he had on. And more often than not, it was the way he interacted with the person that made the show happen. I mean, there was nothing better when Johnny bombed in a monologue. He was just terrific. And, you know, there it truly was the Johnny Carson show. And I can't think of any other television talk show that was that host-driven. You think of all the other shows, daytime or nighttime, and a lot of it had to do with quality of guests and with
Johnny.
You
took the words out of my mouth. That's exactly what I told. That was part of my argument to the company for the few folks who disagreed with me, because I don't do things in a vacuum, and I don't do things in a committee, but I do like to get a lot of opinions from folks before making these decisions. And one of the arguments I made in this was you had a show that people watched for Johnny. And I know this because I've been watching the reruns, and I found myself, ooh, it's Johnny. Oh, Don Rickles is a guest. Even better. But it was about Johnny. And that's where so many of today's hosts are lacking. And a lot of them are funny. People tuned into Jon Stewart for Jon Stewart. And, you know, a lot of them have that quality. But at the same time, you know, if you have to rely just on a big guest, you're in big trouble because there are only 15 guests that get your ratings.
No, that's
right. That's a quote from Jay Leno.
It's true. And, you know, you mentioned Jon Stewart, and while you're right, a lot of people tuned in for Jon Stewart, there were an awful lot of people who, frankly, didn't like Jon Stewart for whatever reason. Back in the day, I didn't know anybody who didn't like Johnny Carson.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
maybe
he was kind of like grandma's guy, dad's guy, and by default, your guy, if you were, you know, if you grew up with him in the 70s and 80s. And again, it was the fact that there were only three choices. But he did have tough competition. You know, Dick Cavett had huge guests on.
Mm-hmm.
You had Merv Griffin up against him. You had, you know, obviously in the 80s, you had everyone going up, Rick Dees and Pat Sajak and a long list of folks.
But even in the 60s, like a Joey Bishop.
Yes, didn't be correct. And so so you had all these guys going after that franchise, but no one was going to topple Johnny. I mean, probably the toughest competition for Johnny, actually, it's a fact because I did a lot of homework on this, was in the late 80s, very like 89, 90, and it was Arsenio Hall because he got the kids of the parents who were watching Johnny. And, you know, at the time you had more cable choices. Now, cable back then was reruns and movies. It didn't have a lot of original, didn't have The Walking Dead, didn't have original series, but you had a lot more choices. You had MTV, and the teens had other places to go, so they weren't really. And Johnny was still sticking to kind of his old school band nature. The old school band, we had Doc Severinsen here in Chicago, where I'm based, to do some promos for us and to do some interviews for us. And he was saying, you know, the reason I wore those crazy outfits was you had a lot of not only hippies, but, you know, everyone in a band was doing drugs. So even though I was a big band, we kind of portrayed that scene, you know. Ed was the drunk. He was the lush. And Johnny was kind of the cool guy in control, and like you said, he would trip. He made a trip come across beautifully. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd never seen any. I couldn't tell if he purposely wanted the jokes to bomb or not.
Right.
That's how good he was.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. There was a story in the 60s, and I'm hogging you, by the way. We do have people who want to talk to you, like George and King of Prussia, that we'll get to. But in Presque Isle, Maine, you know, back in the day, you talked about having three networks. Well, in some cases, like a little market like that, it's one station that is all three networks. And they would, the city council, whatever, would vote on what they were going to show. And why I remember this was sometime in the 60s, for whatever reason, they voted out Johnny Carson. And what happened was the entire city council got voted out over this.
Wow.
Yeah. And we don't think about it being that rare a commodity, but back
but yeah,
then.
Yeah, there were markets like Poughkeepsie and some of those that had, like two stations. And ABC was on for certain hours and NBC on the other hours.
Right. And some of them were, like West Palm Beach had that for years, a split thing. But Presque Isle was the only place I knew that had all three on one. And for whatever reason, when Johnny went, so did they. And I wish I had kept names or whatever, could research that, because just on a sociological phenomena, I can't imagine anyone voting out Johnny Carson. So it's hard to understand what they might have voted in, and I don't know. I don't know what was running. But it was that big a thing where literally the town banded together to remove the local politicians over it. So, but when we talk about politics, you mentioned before about, you know, jokes about Jimmy Carter or whatever. The reason this will work is because he wasn't a political show. And
no, in fact, I always thought Johnny was a conservative. And the Breitbart interview said he was a liberal.
Yeah,
I mean, I couldn't tell.
Yeah, but I also wonder about that. I had read that recently too, and I thought, you'll have to talk to Jeff about that, because I'm not sure I buy that.
You know, I did talk to Jeff about it.
And?
And Jeff said, Johnny wouldn't want you to know, so I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, no! Oh,
I'm like, okay, well, let's talk about Angie Dickinson then.
Oh, so, yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
But he... But yeah, he said Johnny wouldn't want you to know, and he wouldn't tell you, and so I'm not going to tell you. And that's a great thing about Jeff. You know, Johnny's been gone now for just a little over 10 years. Well, almost 11 years. It'll be 11 years in January, later this month, I should say. And he still protects that legacy, which I think is great, because that's exactly what Johnny would want. And when we were doing this deal, I remember I called Jeff. I mean, a little inside baseball here. I said, Jeff, I got a lot of episodes with Joan Rivers, and they're all great, but would Johnny be pissed that we reran them? And he said, thank you for asking, but no, he'd be okay with that, because Johnny and Joan had their feud.
Oh, big.
But I even found myself being protective of Johnny's legacy because of, you know, with all those meetings with the family and with Jeff being the family, and doing this deal, I wanted to make sure that, you know, nothing there would basically bother Johnny, just to protect that legacy.
Yeah, that feud was legendary and understandable, I guess, to some degree on both sides, but sad that literally Joan never talked to him till the day he died after that.
Yeah, they never talked. And you know what? And there were two sides of it. And I knew Joan just a little bit
and
liked her a lot. And at the same time, he adored her. But Johnny was the type of guy that if you never, two things about Johnny I discovered just in reading books and talking to people associated with the show that I got to know through this process. Two things about Johnny. If Johnny Carson liked you, he gave you the world, unless you ask him for something. You know, if you went to Johnny and said, hey, I need something, he thought you were using him.
Right.
But if you didn't ask for anything, and I think that's part of the reason he and Jeff were so close. Jeff's just a genuine, you know, he grew up in Philadelphia. His father was successful with United Airlines. His mother was a very strong lady. He grew up his own guy. And Johnny was a star when Jeff was a kid. And Jeff didn't know anything other. He didn't ask Johnny for it. I think that's one of the reasons Johnny adored him, was he just... You know, Johnny asked Jeff to come work for him, not Jeff. And the other thing about Johnny was he was secretive. He was very giving. I mean, I think they found out after he passed away, he'd read a story. You know, he still got his hometown newspaper delivered to him at his office in Santa Monica. And he'd read a story in the newspaper about, you know, some kid born with an illness or something. And he would just write a check to the family and say, hey, I, you know, hope this little bit helps. And he gave gosh, no one knows how much money he gave away. Just on, and the other thing, he wrote his own. Not only did he write his own letters, but he wrote his own envelopes. Bill Zamy, who wrote an article on him in Esquire, after he had retired, he'd been gone for 10 years. In 2002, Bill writes this article, and Johnny was impressed with it and wrote him a letter from home, and the stationery is on Johnny's stationery, and he licked the envelope and stamped it himself. You know, he was that was the Nebraska in him.
Right, right.
Well, and those of us from the Midwest, like I grew up in Indiana. It's not much different. Those of us from the Midwest, we know what that's like.
Yeah, obviously he was a very complex person, and you know, you'll read a lot about him on every side. But even his biggest personal detractors cannot, and I haven't even heard one of them try, to take away from the force he was able to create, literally by his own persona, because that was the Tonight Show. It was his persona day one till 1992, and that's what you're bringing back.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Now, okay, I've hogged you long enough. Let's see here. We lost Kimberly. We can call back Kimberly if you like. But we've got George in King of Prussia. Hello, George.
Happy New Year, Raleigh. I hope you're doing well.
Yes, you too, George. What's up?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Sean, congratulations. First of all, I love Antenna TV. I've loved it since I first found it. I heard about it for a while, but I think when you guys first came on, I hadn't figured out how to get the signal through the digital signal. I'm not too far from all the transmitters in Philadelphia, but the digital signals are tough to get because I live in a valley. But once I was able to get Antenna TV, I was hooked on it, and I watch every day.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for that. We're on a good station there in Philly. We're on PHL channel 17.2, and I'm glad to. I especially love the over the air viewers. They're the most loyal to us. We're on a lot of the cable systems, but the over the air viewers are the diehards. I love you guys.
Well, now that the cables and the Fios has picked you up, now there's no reason I can't watch you guys. And 17, it is a great station. It's a great signal out here too. One of the better ones. And I love that you guys are using the old PHL logo and the bug in the corner. I love it.
Yeah, that was actually kind of a, because we are branded Antenna TV. That was actually kind of a generic name. It was on accident. We had a couple consultants talking to us at the time, and they said, "Yeah, let's call it Boss TV." And one of the things that we used, it was a working title. It was we called it Antenna TV as a working title because that's what it was. It was going to be a TV station. You get over your antenna. We didn't know for sure we'd get all the cable carriage we did, which has been great. Thank goodness we did. But it was a working title, and we just kind of let it stick. And part of my pitch to the stations was, look, Milwaukee and Philly, go back to your old retro look, the look that everyone grew up with when they were watching these shows in syndication on your station. And a lot of them adopted that. Channel 5 in L.A. does it. Milwaukee Channel 6 does it, and obviously Philly. So it's very cool, and it adds even a better taste of nostalgia. We don't put, you know, the bugs on the lower right hand side of the screen. If you have one on the network, it's generated by your local station. We don't have our own bug sitting there. So it really does give it more of a local appeal.
Well, I dig it, and you know, as someone who's lived here my whole life, 17 was just a great independent station for so long, and a lot of that personality still comes through in the way, not just with Antenna TV, but the main signal really has built a nice identity in the last few years as the closest thing we really have to an Indian in Philadelphia, and they've got a good local presence. They're really big on social media. They do a really good job. They carried the Mummers Parade all day today, and you know, they've really done a very good job here of having a good Philadelphia identity. But having Antenna on point two really is really the icing on the cake. You know, Sean, you had mentioned about how these, first of all, Johnny Carson is timeless. I know he's been gone for, like you said, almost 11 years, hard to believe, but these shows are timeless. And, You know, I mean, you and I are about the same age. We're from the same generation. And anyone who says, oh, well, you know, they're running Johnny Carson, that's going to appeal to the, you know, the too old of a demo. I say, you know, there are so many people of our generation, there are plenty of Gen Xers and even younger, who remember growing up or, you know, as young adults when Johnny was the show. That was the show. That was what people watched. And like you said, it wasn't that they were watching The Tonight Show. They were watching Johnny Carson. And I just know that it was such a big show. You know, there are so many of these late night shows, and some of them are not bad, and some of them I think are awful, but there's no shortage of these late night shows today. But all of them to me, and I don't know if this is the, you know, the consultants, and they're saying this is the way the shows need to look, they need to be more touchy-feely, they just seem small. The stages seem small. The audience sizes seem small. I know toward the end of Leno, he was going right out into the audience and shaking hands, and I guess that's kind of cool. There was something about Johnny Carson. It just seemed so big. It was such a big show. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yes. No, there was. And what's ironic is it was small. I mean, that set was small. And, you know, the staff on Carson, they did Carson with about half the staff that you do a typical late-night talk show with now. Now you got more components. Now you got social networking, and you've got a lot of on the. You know, Johnny never got outside the studio. You didn't do on the street stuff, but I found out. I saw a picture of Johnny's staff, his crew. I want to say it was from 1987 or 88, and every year they took a picture with the crew, or every couple years they took a picture with the crew at his desk. And his stage was actually very small. And it's going to air on the special that's going to air in 35 minutes on Antenna TV, because we actually go back to the stage and we show it. But not only was the stage, but his staff was tiny. And I said to the person who showed me the picture, I said, where's the rest of the crew? He said, oh, that's lighting and makeup and cameras and director and producers and associate producers and gophers. And he said, it's everybody. It's the whole crew. And they all just kind of stood there on his stage, and Johnny was at the center. And, you know, it's amazing how big that show was when in reality it was pretty small.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah. Carson was bigger than life.
I think that's why. I think it seemed big because Johnny was so big.
Yeah.
God only makes he only prints a few guys like that up in a lifetime. You know, there aren't many that can touch so many people. And I think the greatest enjoyment is to get a call like this. For me, I've done a lot of things in my career that have been fun and have been cool to do and I'm proud of. But this is something I'm kind of, in a weird way, the proudest of, because it's one of the first shows I ever saw. I was a kid in Marion, Indiana when I first saw it. And I was excited. My dad let me stay up late, but I was really bummed out because I didn't want to watch Johnny Carson. That was my dad's show. I was a kid. But there were no kid shows on at 11:30 at night. And what's weird is now when you see how many people, when you read comments, and they're all positive. You know, Access Hollywood last night did a story on us. It's the last minute and a half, 2 minutes of their show, their broadcast. And, you know, you get young guys there that are hosting that show who are talking about it with excitement, a smile on their face, and they're showing clips of Tom Hanks doing, you know, juggling on the show or some other bit on the show. And it's just so powerful. And I think it's one of the best parts of this deal is how many people are excited about it. You know, when you can positively touch that many folks, it makes all the work that went into it worthwhile.
You betcha. All right, George, thank you for calling.
Hey, thank you, Raleigh. Happy New Year. And again, Sean, congratulations. I'm looking forward to seeing it tonight. Usually I like it when Raleigh stays on as late as possible, but I'm actually looking forward to ducking out at 11 to watch this tonight.
Well, we're going to rerun it overnight at 2 o'clock. So after you're done with Raleigh, because she's going to get mad if I drive you away.
No, that's fine. Thanks, George.
Guys.
Check it out. Yeah,
George, thank you.
Absolutely watch it when it comes on. All right, we've got RJ in New York. Hello, RJ.
Happy New Year, Raleigh.
You too.
Happy New Year, John and Mr. Compton. I want to just begin and say thank you. Thank you. I'm just, you know, we're just a regular family, regular people. But I have to say, turning on Antenna TV is It's like going home again to a time in your childhood. I don't know what it is, just that really such a warm feeling in the pit of my stomach. And my wife and family, we love what you've done with Antenna TV. And with Johnny Carson coming to television once again and to be able to relive some of the great memories, I really hope you know what it means to so many of us. We just got done with the Yule Log. What a beautiful program. Channel 11 in New York, it feels more warm, and exciting, and Antenna TV just so very, very, very close to us. Just
RJ,
like television,
I
think
the
years
log
ago, and
what,
you know,
one of the things that inspired
smaller,
Antenna
local,
TV.
It just feels great. I wanted to
well,
say
one
thank
of,
you.
One of the
so
things
excited.
That inspired us was the Yule Log. It sounds silly, but Channel 11 in New York ran the Yule Log through the 60s and 70s on Christmas Day, early morning. And it was just a fireplace with classical Christmas music. And they took it away in the 90s. And it was just the station had become too hip for it. And then September 11th, 2001 happened. And the station management at the time, I wasn't with Tribune, but the station management at the time said, you know, it's time to bring the Yule Log back because there's a sentimentality to it. People are going to want to see that. It's going to bring back good days. And you know what? It's exactly what we've done with this network. If you've had a bad day, if someone passes away who's important to you, has been in your life for a long time, you just want to escape, that's what we've tried to do, is build a network that takes you to a different time and place. And, you know, if you want to go back to the 80s, we have family ties. If you want to go back to the 70s, we have, you know, gosh, a long list of shows. But that's exactly what we've tried to do. And I appreciate that you are a fan.
Well, obviously, just as Raleigh, you're a master communicator. And we, just as regular viewers, we just want to say that we appreciate it. Johnny Carson, if a joke failed, we remember an instance when he grabbed the microphone, pulled it down, he said, attention, Kmart shoppers, and the whole place went wild.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. And by the way, we do have that episode.
That's great.
We did go through, I tell you, RJ, since you've seen the best of, you know, you've probably got the DVD or the VHS tapes from when they did the best ofs, is my guess. We did go through and we grabbed a lot of those episodes. So it wasn't, there will be a lot of episodes that are just everyday episodes. They're just, there's nothing special. Most of them are. There's just, they're Johnny. But then there are ones like the little kid who he did the magic trick for, was the 4-year-old adorable kid who had just won the spelling bee, and he invited Johnny to his birthday party the next day at Disneyland, and Johnny did a little magic trick for him on stage, and he makes a quarter disappear, and then the quarter comes out of the kid's ear, and the kid smiles and looks at Johnny and says, well, how do you make it really disappear? And Johnny looked up the camera and said, you get married. And, you know, he was just so quick like that, and those are episodes we did grab. Vlasta the Polka Lady, that's going to air on, I think, January 31st. Where she comes out and basically, you know, attacks Johnny on stage. She's just in love with him. She starts crying and hugging him, and it's just a funny, great show. And to be able to see it in a long form, rather than broken up into segments as, you know, features, is really special.
All right, RJ, thank you for calling.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it, and all the best. Happy New Year to both of you, all of you.
Thank you.
All right. Randy in Virginia. Hello, Randy.
Hello, and Happy New Year. I want I have a quick question, but I want you to look forward to this series of episodes, since I read in August the article that you were airing the episodes in their entirety, and I appreciate your doing. I am actually old enough that I was allowed to stay up for Carson from about the second or third week that he was on the air. So I used to cheat sometimes weeknights and turn the television on and on school nights and watch. But I did have one, actually two questions. what's the oldest episode that you're going to be airing this year? And my other question is, I heard you talk about problems with guilds and licensing. Are the musical acts going to air?
Yeah, so I'll give you both in order. The oldest episode will be a 1972 episode. I forget exactly which one it is, but it's from early 1972. It's the oldest one we have. Actually, it's not too early as 72 because I think it's when he's in Burbank, and he started in Burbank May 1st of 72. So it'll be sometime in 72. And then what I did, Randy, was we tried to break it up. So out of the 365 that we have for year one, I think, you know, we took between 15 and 20 from each year. So we didn't just target 1978. We didn't just target 1985. We tried to do a nice balance. We did do a lot of the last shows in a lot of the last, you know, couple weeks in 92, the last one being a Clint Eastwood appearance in mid-May of 92, but I did not pick the last show or the second to the last show for two reasons. Number one, it means it was coming to an end. And I'm going to try to trick you in your brain that when you watch every night, you really think you're back in time. I don't want the show to come to an end. And the other reason was because everyone's seen them. If you've got, I mean, they sold millions of those DVD sets. Those episodes are special, but not in the way that I'm going to run them. Mm-hmm. So we left those off our list of episodes, at least for now. Then the second question was the music. We have licensed certain songs, certain performances. I will tell you, in the first couple months, you won't see many of them. There's a Jackie Gleason episode that I wanted to get on in the first couple months that had Jim Stafford performing. We did get the music cleared on that. But we have to do that song by song. It's episode by episode. It's as much as it is easy, it's very expensive. When I say it's easy, you know, you just get a good lawyer to do it. We have the best in L.A. doing it, but it's very expensive. And we are a free over-the-air television service which relies just purely on advertising dollars. So, you know, I can't go crazy with my budgets. So we're doing it intelligently. You will see music acts. There will be a handful. There are some that are in the public domain that are much easier for us. Obviously, we don't have to clear. But, you know, we even had to clear the Tonight Show theme because that was owned by Paul Anka. So we couldn't run Johnny without running the original theme. So all that's being handled. But in the first, because we didn't get the deal done until August 5th, we weren't able to get all of that done as fast as we wanted. So the first couple months, you're not going to see many music performances.
Interesting. All right.
Okay.
Randy,
well,
thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. And to both of you, Happy New Year, and I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Now, you know, that's interesting. I know we had talked a lot about the rights, and I didn't realize the conclusion was you had to license each individual performance. Now, are you having to do that on multiple levels, or is this just writer and publisher? I mean, what is involved in this?
I do not know. Here's the thing. There's a lawyer. I am so I got to remind myself every day I do have another job.
Right.
And that's to oversee programming for 42 stations and two digital networks. You know, we have a partnership with This TV as well, which is a movie service, and I've got folks that work for me that I have to, you know, manage. And so I have honestly laid off a lot of the details that I was involved in early on. I have fortunately been able to push those off to other folks who work with us and work with me. So I don't know how that's being handled. I just know that I get the attorney's bills and we see what's been approved and what we're working through. But it's usually when you buy a show and you're in my position, you buy a show from Sony or CBS, because they own a lot of the old libraries. For example, you know, CBS owns Family Ties through their distribution arms, or at least they distribute it for whoever owns it. They handle all the licensing.
Right.
You know, the music's covered, and they've done all that work.
Sure.
Well, because Johnny had never, that's why I said this deal is unprecedented. No one, Johnny just took the tapes and put them in a vault. And I think, again, to answer the question you had way back earlier in the hour, was how did you pull this off? Why didn't someone else do it? I think it's because it was so much work. You had to start from scratch. A lot of networks and folks would look at it and say, well, if you can't control all the rights, if you don't have all the rights covered, now we'll let us know when you do, and then we'll call you back.
Yeah.
And Johnny's camp just didn't want to have to go do all that work. And by the way, I wouldn't either if I were them, because you didn't know what sort of usage there was going to be out
sure,
of it.
Sure, absolutely. And as you said at the start, they don't need the money. So going through that would be, you know, just counterproductive on every level. All right, Dave in South Carolina, welcome.
Hi, folks, and I really appreciate the chance to ask this question, because I'm one of these guys that I'm talking and listening to you guys, I'm watching a football game on the other screen of my computer. I live around streaming, and I live in an area, even though I think I'm in a top 50 SMSA and probably one of the top 40 markets in the U.S., I live far enough away from a digital signal that I can't use an antenna, and I refuse to pay for cable TV because 99% of what is on cable television is horse manure, and I don't even want to talk about the other competition. I won't mention names, even though I realize this is just a podcast. But here's my question for you. Given everything you have on antenna TV, and I have had a chance to watch, and I really do like it, will there ever be a chance that you could take that in a digital format and let me pay you a monthly fee so I can stream it?
I would love to, and I wouldn't overcharge you, I promise. The problem is when we do these rights, there are certain exclusivities and non-exclusivities that exist. And as I mentioned earlier, we do not have no studio is going to do a rev share with us. So I have to demonstrate that I can really make money doing that, and that there'll be enough guys like you out there, guys and gals like you, that would do it, pay for it. My goal would be to get there, yes. Right now I'm not anywhere close to that. But I would be lying to you if I didn't say my goal would be in the next year to 3 years to find a way to pull that off. It's just, again, it's a lot of work, and I have to, you know, the studios have their certain rights, and a lot of them, by the way, for example, I mentioned it, you know, CBS distributes Jackie Gleason. Well, the Gleason estate owns it. They're just a middleman. So it's not like I can just go get permission from them. Oh, I do a lot of business with them, and you guys, can you help me out here and do this deal? It's not even up to them. It's like with Carson. There are certain things I could and couldn't get. Now, we have TV everywhere rights, but that doesn't do you any good. What you want to be able to do is, you know, sit on your Mac or your PC and have it coming through. And I get that, and that's what I would love to have done. I'd love for you to have it on a tablet at some point. We're not there yet.
All right.
And let me make one final comment, and I'm out of here, because I know you guys have got a lot of callers. You know, the one thing you've got to deal with that I just thought about, you've got people like Sinatra and Rickles and all these guys who have really complicated legal, I guess in this case, estate situations to deal with. But the one thing that I think would be absolutely fantastic about bringing Carson back is that if you can get all those routines in, there will be an entire generation of millennials who will finally understand what politically incorrect humor is, and they will see it demonstrated in guys like Rickles and Sinatra and all these other guys they brought on. Are you able to pull all that together? Have you gotten the rights to do that? Because I can imagine that being probably one of the most complicated things you're having to deal with right now.
Well, when the artists come on, unless you're performing a music act, you sign away. I mean, you're not signing away. You're giving permission for that usage. So every time Rickles was on, or Bob Hope, or even Madonna, you agree to be on the show in all forms of however the show is distributed. So that's not a problem. The only problem, and it's not even a problem, it's only a problem if you make it one, is the music. Right. When a performer comes on and does a song, if they do Amazing Grace, it's in the public domain, that's not a problem. If they do you know, a Nat King Cole record. They do Beach Boys come on and perform one of their songs. I got to go make a deal with them. That's what's got to be done. And so, and by the way, that's just a lot of, there's a lot of expense there, and there's a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
Because the paperwork is when you have hundreds and hundreds of episodes. And, you know, Johnny had a lot of... Johnny either typically had, in the 80s, a stand-up comedian or a music guest. There were very few shows where he had both. So, you know, as I was explaining earlier, I think it was to Randy, you know, a lot of the first couple months you'll see the stand-up comedians rather than the music performances, only because we're still in the process of getting that done.
All right.
All right, thanks, Dave.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, you just answered the question I asked before, actually, because the performers are signing away the rights by being on the show, and I'm sure that's true for the musical performers as well. So you're dealing with the typical royalties for writer and publisher. If they sing it in the public domain, no problem. If somebody else wrote it, big problem.
And, yes.
Yeah, especially with publishing, I can see that just... One of the problems that I have with all of this is that the rights Nazis, if you will, are looking to squeeze every dime out of everything. And when Dave is asking about, for instance, doing something streaming or something to that nature, I would assume that it is tougher to get people to go along with quote-unquote new media usage.
Well, I don't know, because we haven't attacked it yet. The one thing I'll say, and I can't believe I'm saying this because I thought it was be much harder, it was a lot of work, but the guilds were absolutely fair with us. Every guild, the DGA, the WGA, SAG-AFTRA, and the American Federation of Musicians, they were all absolutely fair. They got a good deal, and we got a good deal, meaning both parties walked away with fair treatment. They didn't want to keep Johnny off the air, but at the same time, you know, they had to create a deal that incentivized them to do this, which was fair. So that was the good news. It actually wasn't that difficult. It was just a long time.
Wow.
It, you know, it just seemed like a long time for me. In hindsight, it wasn't that bad. It was 6 months. But when you're working on it every single day,
right,
and your wife's yelling at you at 11:30 at night to come to bed and get off the computer, you know, that consumed every day and night for 6 months and longer. So it felt much longer to me. But they were actually very fair. And I think in the streaming situation, I think they would be too. I have to deal with more than Carson folks on that. That's a whole different issue.
Exactly.
That involves studios and partners and distributors.
Now, speaking of distribution, it's great that you're on increasingly on more and more cable systems, but what's the future hold for Antenna TV with Dish and Direct?
They don't carry multicast channels. It's too bad. We don't have any multicast coverage with them, which is frustrating. But they, you know, if enough people scream and moan, then that may make a difference. For folks who are not familiar with the network that are listening to us tonight, and the ones that have listened that have dialed in know who we are. If you're intrigued and you want to look up and find out if we are available in your market, because it is hard to find us when you've got 500 cable channels, you can go to antennatv.tv, and in the upper right hand screen, just type in your zip code. And it'll tell you exactly where we are to the channel position. And in markets where you've got four or five cable providers, it tells you specifically whether you're on, here in Chicago, it's RCN, WOW, and Comcast. It gives you each one of those channel positions by zip code. It's a very, very up-to-date and incredibly awesome database that's been kept.
Now, it's funny, while we're talking, John's been writing me notes on the screen, and of course he was happy to hear everybody liking Channel 17 since he used to work at PHL, but what he said just now, I have to pass along, he says, if Blue Highways can get on Dish, you would think anyone can get on Dish. So it is interesting when they talk about, you know, they've got 500 channels, and you say, wait a minute, who are half of these? But I can also see when they make a blanket decision where they're not carrying the sub-channels, that's a tough thing. But Carson...
Well, and it sounds scary. I mean, I tell people all the time who have Dish and Direct, oh, we can't watch it. Yes, you can. easily. Go to Best Buy, go to Target, go to Walmart. I just saw one at Costco. It sits in the mirror. If you, unless you live really far out there, you know, 50, 60 miles, and then you need an outdoor antenna, you know, a big antenna. But if you live, you know, within 20 to 30 air miles of a TV transmitter that carries us, you know, I live in Winnetka, north of Chicago, about 15, 20 miles from downtown. And I just, you know, I put up my little antenna on the back of my TV, and I can switch from cable over to antenna. Now, I have, also have cable, so I get us on the system. But I watch us over the air, too, just to check it out and make sure everything looks right. And if so, if you have Dish and Direct, you can easily just hook up the antenna to your coax cable input there. Is that what it's called, coax cable input? and do a scan of your channels and just click it over to over-the-air television. You know, for a first-timer, it'll take you 7 minutes to figure out. And that way, if you have Dish and Direct, you don't have to cancel Dish and Direct. You can just switch over to your antenna.
No, and that works very well when you're in a city. When you're, you know, in the middle of where we are, good luck on that.
Well, that's the challenge, and that's why folks want us streaming.
Yes, exactly, and I think that'll be terrific. But, you know, Carson may be, as we're talking about this, more of a game changer than I even thought initially, because that could be the thing that pushes and drives some of this, because I think there's going to be a lot of people who are not getting antenna TV who are going to be very boisterous about finding ways to do that.
Yes.
It's terrific.
Yes, I hope so.
Well, you're 45 minutes away from launch, and you've got pre-launch stuff on, so I know I don't want to keep you all night.
Yeah, so we've got Jack, Benny, and Johnny on right now. Jack Benny's show from season, I think it was season 13.
Okay.
Or no, season 14, episode 5, from August or October of 1963, so it was a year into Johnny's run on The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
And Johnny actually sings and dances.
Oh, that's great.
And he plays the drums, and Jack Benny's basically getting jealous of Johnny. And at the end of the show, Johnny goes into the dressing room and says, "I wonder how Jack stays so young-looking and stays so fresh for every show." And they roll Jack Benny into the dressing room, and they take him apart. He ends up being a robot. It's actually a pretty innovative episode.
Yeah, for 63, you betcha.
Yes.
Yeah, that's terrific. Well, you've done a wonderful job with this, and I know, as I mentioned, 12 million people watching Johnny at his height. I wouldn't be surprised that you come close to it tonight.
I don't know if we'll do that, but boy, that would be awesome.
Wouldn't that?
That'd be great.
When will you know?
You know what? We won't. We won't. We don't have a national Nielsen service deal yet.
Okay.
Actually, I take that out. We will find out. We will be told. And we will know probably within the next 7 days.
Okay.
But we won't use it to sell it.
No,
I mean,
you can't.
We don't have that deal in place yet. So, you know, they'll share information, but we won't be allowed to share it with the public or sell it until, you know, we decide if that's a deal that we're going to go forward with. You know, our network's still a baby.
Of course.
We're 5 years old today, and up until, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, we were only seen in 50% of the country.
Right.
So it's, you know, we're still new to a lot of folks.
Oh, sure. And rating, I don't know how many people listening realize how expensive it is to subscribe to ratings. It's astronomical. So for a young network, that's still on the wish list. But we all know, like you say, that at least word of mouth, we'll know in a week. And I wouldn't be surprised that it comes damn close to those numbers. I think this is terrific. And congratulations for doing this.
Well, thanks for having me on. You helped pass some time before we launch, and I really appreciate it and all you've done for me.
Oh, nothing compared to what you've done begin to equal all you've done for me, as I was saying on the air. I would be literally nothing without Sean Compton. That's for damn sure, Sean. I can't thank you enough.
Well, that's a bunch of crap, but whatever. But seriously, all the folks, especially the guys that called in, thank you for your kind words. It's one of those things in life where you don't hear many people complaining, and it's really a great feeling to know that, you know, that many people are excited about the return of the king. And I, quite honestly, I did the deal for me. I was excited. I just wanted to see Johnny every night. And I was, you know, so I kind of did the deal. I'm like, yeah, I hope this works. And fortunately, I'm not the only guy out there who's obsessed with the Carson legacy.
I can't wait to start reading the reports tomorrow because I know there will be many, and I can almost guarantee they will be 100% positive.
I hope so.
All right.
Well,
we will.
It's not like I have to go and stand on the side of the stage and produce a show. The hard part's been done.
Right.
We just got to run the tapes. That's all.
Exactly. Well, there's a lot of people waiting for this. And as I say, I think that the press in the next few days is going to confirm everything we've heard so far. And congratulations for doing it.
Well, my friend and Carson biographer, who's become a friend to this process, Bill Zamy, would be very mad at me for not plugging this because he's been doing a lot of press for us on this. And he's kept reminding me to plug. He says, remind everyone, these are full hour and 90-minute episodes in their original form. Because, again, you forget, monologue was 8 minutes. We have segments from the 70s episodes, the 90-minute long, segments that are 12 and 14 minutes.
Yeah.
Think about that. And he's like, you got to remind people they're going to go 12 to 14 minutes without a commercial. You can't get through 5 minutes of a sitcom today without a commercial. And we've not chopped these up to add extra commercial time. I mean, not every show is in its full form because we have certain rights issues or inappropriate issues that had to be removed, like the Bill Cosby.
Yeah, right.
you know, and that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. We're not chopping up in any way other than looking out at special things like that. But you know, we had one episode. I won't tell you which one it was, but we had one episode where Johnny was reading psychic predictions, and one of the predictions was that the World Trade Center was going to fall over.
No. Oh, no.
And, yeah, and, you know, and I was in New York on 9/11, fortunately not in the danger zone, but I know, I just, you know, and this was from Johnny, you know, years, I mean, more than 20 years before it happened.
Right.
And it was part of a joke and making fun of a psychic prediction, and we took that out. You know, it's just wasn't appropriate.
Right. Right.
And some people will think, well, it's part of history. Yeah, but it's a bad piece of history that, you know, you would never joke about. And had he known, he wouldn't have done the joke. But that was so those are the types of things that have been removed. And again, we've done it in a way where you're gonna have a hard time figuring it out.
That's terrific. Well, looking forward to seeing them and to hearing more about the reaction, which I know is going to be very positive. And I thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to me.
Thank you, Raleigh. And I'll take care and talk to you soon. And again, thanks to all your listeners who hopefully will be viewers when you're not on.
There you go.
All right. Take care.
You too. Sean Compton, Tribune Television, Johnny Carson, tonight in, 40 minutes or 38 minutes, 37 minutes from right now.